Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the class of immigration. As you know, one of the things of immigration is one of the great debates today. What is immigration and what we would like to have? So we're going to bring you the sources in Torah that the Torah demonstrates to explain to you if immigration is a legal thing in Torah's eyes, and if it's something that the residents of a certain country or a certain city could protest and permit other residents from coming into their city for many reasons. If you think about the problem of immigration, the pro and the con is, what are people worried about immigration? It could be many things. It could be taking away business from the people that live in the country, that they're coming in and strangers are coming and taking away business. And the society itself is having a hard time to sustain its own citizens. Another problem could be also that immigration is concerned about security, who enters the country. A third issue could be cultural. You know, every country has a certain culture, a certain way of doing things, and when you have a lot of immigrants, it changes the culture and the way the country operates, because now the immigrants, especially if it's a lot at a time, change it. What does the Torah say, and what's the Jewish perspective? You'll be fascinated about the things the Torah does say, and then you will be the judge at the end of the course about immigration today in America. How should we define it, and if there is such a thing that's legal according to Jewish law. However, just to start a little about immigration, this issue started in 1492. What happened in 1492? There were a lot of Jews were kicked out of Spain, and they had to go to different countries. Portugal, some went to Morocco, everyone went to different places. In some instances, the people, the captains of the boats that took people to other countries, took a very high price from them. And then they threw them into the water, you know, and they kept the money. A lot of people died on the way. Some countries let them in, but they also had no food. You know, it was like a hard thing. In Portugal, it was only a few years, then they expelled them from there. Anyways, so what happened was, there were some countries that they ended up a group of Jews to come to Rome. How they ended up in Italy, Rome, they ended up there. And there was a group of Jews that came to the bishop or the head of, I don't know what you want to call him, in Rome, to ask him not to allow the Jewish immigrants that escaped from the Inquisition to come to their country, because it would diminish their ability to make business. And also it might awaken the non-Jewish neighbors to be upset that now there's more Jews, you know. In those times, anti-Semitism was much more felt. So the bishop of Rome, I don't know what you want to call him, what's the head bishop? The cardinal. He was in shock. He was in shock because he always thought that Jews have mercy on other Jews. And this is the first time the Jews came to him not to allow other Jews in. So it was a little shocking to him. The other story that you're all familiar with, which happened during Kristallnacht, there was about 937 Jews, I'm sure you're all familiar, came from Europe to America, and they sent a telegram to President Roosevelt, to allow them to get in. No answer, and they had to sail. Then they went to the American coastline. They ended up, the patrol boats guarded them because they didn't want, God forbid, any Jews to jump off the boat and swim to the dry land. And eventually, you know, many of them had to die in the Holocaust because no one let them, went back, and that's it. This is a big issue. Now, you have many times you find, if you go back to the early fathers that founded the country, how did they look at immigration? How did they put it together? So they put together a concept that any white, free person that lives in the country for 2 years automatically becomes a citizen. White free, because in those times there were slaves, and slaves that are not free don't have that ability, and so on. And then they had these Chinese that came, and they had children in the country. Do you get automatically citizenship because you have children? Anyways, so we're going to just read a few texts and then get to the Torah perspective of immigration and borders. Now, should there be borders? Maybe we should just have all open borders and one nice world. One nice, everyone can go anywhere. Why are you limiting a Canadian to come to America and has to go through a border? Let's make the world open. We're one world, we're one unit, we're one place. Should we have borders to begin with?
Yes.
Should there be distinction to begin with? So we're going to show you what the Torah says about borders in general. Then we're going to show you if the Torah allows that the borders should be controlled by immigration laws. And then we'll show you different cities if they're allowed to say that we don't want residents from other cities to come to our cities because they're going to ruin the economy and ruin the security of the neighborhood. In America, is one of the only countries today that immigration is pretty high. Many people want to come to America. It's not like I don't know how many people want to immigrate to Saudi Arabia. I don't know how many people want to immigrate to Jordan. You know what I mean? It's not like you're looking, I can't wait to leave America so I can go to Jordan. America is an open society. At the same time, there's an American culture. There's an American way of living. You know, only in America you have pizza for dinner and for lunch. In Chinese, you don't have such a thing. So we have to see about that, because if you have so many Chinese moving here, then what's going to be with the pizza industry and so on? So let's look inside. You're going to see that this is not a joke. This is a serious concern. And the Torah does touch about it in a very strong way, in a very shocking way. And hopefully that tonight we'll be able to come out seriously to be able to figure out how we should look at immigration. So let's look at text 1 on page in the student book. If you have a page 40, you see the I don't know if you have it. It's text 1.
Page 42.
Oh, 42. I'm sorry. Page 42. Read.
To paraphrase Rousseau, man is born free, yet everywhere he is caged. Barbed wire, concrete walls, and gun-toting guards confine people to the nation-state of their birth. But why? The argument for open borders is both economic and moral. All people should be free to move about the earth, uncaged by the arbitrary lines known as borders. Not every place in the world is equally well-suited to mass economic activity. Nature's bounty is divided unevenly. Variations in wealth and income created by these differences are magnified by governments that suppress entrepreneurship and promote religious intolerance, gender discrimination, or other bigotry. Closed borders compound these injustices, cementing inequality into place and sentencing their victims to a life of penury. What moral theory justifies using wire, wall, and weapon to prevent people from moving to opportunity? What moral theory justifies using tools of exclusion to prevent people from exercising their right to vote with their feet? No standard moral framework, be it utilitarian, libertarian, egalitarian, Rawlsian, Christian, or any other well-developed perspective regards people from foreign lands as less entitled to exercise their rights or as inherently possessing less moral worth than people lucky to have been born in the right place at the right time. Nationalism, of course, discounts the rights, interests, and moral value of the other. But this disposition is inconsistent with our fundamental moral teachings and beliefs. Freedom of movement is a basic human right. Thus, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights belies its name when it proclaims this right only within the borders of each state. Human rights do not stop at the border. Today, we treat as pariahs those governments that refuse to let their people exit. I look forward to the day when we treat as pariahs those governments that refuse to let people enter.
Okay, so this person who wrote it, Alexander, whatever you want to say, he claims that we should have open borders. There shouldn't be any borders at all. The whole world is one world, and everyone should be free to go anywhere, everywhere, and finish. For 1 minute, we're just going to discuss the pros and cons of strict immigration policies. One of the things people are always worried about concerns security. So people want the immigration to be more concerned who's coming in. Is it a terrorist? Is it someone that could hurt the society? So they want the immigration to be more productive in researching who's coming in. Second concern is jobs. Jobs is also a concern. Why? Because when you have people that are coming in and taking away jobs from people that are living here, so then we don't have jobs. The third concern is welfare and so on. And that's basically. Now, the people that advocate, you see here the numbers on the screen. You want to see 30 in 1994, 31% says we should make it, strengthen the immigration laws. 63% that it's no good, it's a burden. In 2016, it changed. 59% of Americans said strengthen it, and 33% said it's a burden. Can you imagine what a change? To make such strict immigration laws. So 59% want it's more restrictive, and 33% want it less, versus in 1994, which was just the opposite, the percentage. Okay. Let's get to the Torah's perspective, okay? The rest of the book you can read yourself. I don't have to tell you all the history about whites, about blacks, about everything else. That you can see, you can read yourself. All the texts, these beautiful texts, how the immigration laws changed in America since 1776 till today. A lot of changes. It was difficult during Second World War, for people to come from Europe to U.S. It wasn't easy. It was a hardship, and there were many protests against it, but it was very difficult. Today, it's a much easier thing. Let's go to the biblical sources. You'll be shocked to hear about the biblical sources. Text 9, page 51. You have it? This is the Tower of Babel, I'm sure you're familiar with, where all the nations came to one location and decided to live together as one people, one language, one space, one location, one building, and remain the rest of the life in one place. God came and saw it, and he was so upset that he dispersed them in all over the world. We're just going to read the text, and then we'll explain what was God upset about. what God didn't like about everyone living in one location, one place, one people, one language, and one tower. What bothered God? So read text 9.
Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, "Come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth."
Okay, God was very, very upset. Why? Because if you go back to the creation of humans, when God created the first human beings, He said to Adam and Chava, "I'm blessing you, you should be multiply and fruitful and fill the earth." God doesn't want us to be in one location. God wants humanity to fill the earth. We'll soon see why. But He wants the earth to be filled with humanity. Gentiles, Jews, whatever, everyone should fill the earth. And then what did He say? Read text 10 A and B.
God blessed Adam and Eve and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." God blessed humankind that they should fill the entire earth and that the clans should separate from each other to the ends of the earth. But they should not stay all in one place, as the builders of the tower would later intend to do.
Okay, so that's one thing. God wants humans to fill the earth, to bring God to the entire earth. What was their plan? To build one place, we're going to live in the Bavel and finish. Forget, there won't be anyone in South Africa, no one in Africa, no one in Tunisia, no one in America. Everyone should live there. God says, "What are you talking about? I created Adam and Eve and I said I want humans all over the world. I want they should bring humanity all over. I don't want this to become one." That's number one. Number two, not only do I want humans all over the world, I want everyone to live in a separate location. I don't want people in one place. Why? Read text 11.
When the Most High gave nations their lands, when He divided humankind, He set up the borders of these nations to parallel the number of Israel's descendants.
How many?
70.
So He wanted there should be 70 nations, but each nation should be separate. I don't want them together. I want each one to develop separate. Why? Why was it so important that everyone should be in a separate location and live separate with borders? So here we have the story of Bilam. When Bilam came to curse the Jewish people, he saw the entire Jewish nation and he lifted his eyes and he said, "Wow, I never saw people live like this." Why? Every tribe lived separately and every individual among the tribe lived in a separate, discreet way. That it wasn't one mingling chalanpat. Is everyone had a unique. In other words, each tribe was in their location. No tribe was allowed to mix into another tribe, you know, where they inhabited. And then in each tribe, every tent, a family, was faced and built in a way that everyone was separate. Everyone was unique. So when Bilam saw that, he says, "Wow, this is a blessed nation. This is what God wants. God wants us to bring our uniqueness and bring out godliness in everyone in a different way. Because there's no two tribes the same. There's no two people the same. And everyone has a unique talent that they can bring God in their way, in their culture, and in their society." Let's read it in text 12 A and B.
Balaam raised his eyes and saw Israel dwelling according to its tribes. And the Spirit of God rested upon him. He proclaimed his oracle and said, How goodly are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, O Israel.
Keep going.
Dwelling according to its tribes. He saw each tribe dwelling in their respective quarters, and that they were not intermingled.
Why? Say. Further, 12c.
On the verse, Numbers 24, 2, Balaam saw Israel dwelling according to its tribes. Rashi comments, he saw each tribe dwelling in their respective quarters, and that they were not intermingled. What is the virtue in this? Abraham served God more through love than awe, as his soul emanated from the attributes of chesed, divine kindness. Isaac served more through awe than love, inasmuch as his soul was from the divine attribute of gevurah, severity. Jacob served with tiferet, mercy and splendor. In the same way, people ought to know their respective soul's potentials so that they can serve God according to those potentials, according to the divine attributes in which their souls are rooted. So it was with the tribes. Reuben's soul stemmed from the attribute of love and kindness, as did all souls of his tribe. They knew that their primary service was love of God. Simon's soul was rooted in the attribute of severity, as were all souls of his tribe. Awe of God was the dominant aspect of their service. Each tribe knew its path in the service of God. Now, however, the tribes are intermingled, and people simply adopt the ways of their neighbors. This is the deeper meaning of Balaam saw Israel dwelling according to its tribes. Each tribe recognized its uniqueness and served God according to its potential. Had they been intermingled, each would have imitated the other, even though such service would have had no relation to the root of their souls and would have offered their souls no rectification.
So what is he saying? That oneness without difference is dull. We need to have New York City is very unique. Over there everyone pushes and rushes, but that's the culture of New York City. Culture of New York City is you have to rush, you have to push. The culture of the Midwest is hospitality. They have everyone is open. Every state, every country has a uniqueness. And everyone brings out their uniqueness of godliness in their way. So the cultural difference is what God wanted. Because that brings out another piece of godliness, another piece of goodness, another piece of kindness. From every country you have a certain culture and a certain thing that you could learn how their strength is. And then in each country you have different states and different communities that take that culture and bring it in different ways and in different societies. The American culture has a certain culture to it. In America, it's everything is, and then you divide it amongst each state that has in each self. And then you have a culture that Chinese have and Japanese have. Everyone has a culture, and God wants that. That brings out the uniqueness of God more, and brings out the beauty of having a one God that can make different, hundreds of different cultures, and still bring out the same one God. The plural equals one. When you have just oneness, so it's one. But when you have the plural equal one, as it says on the dollar bill, what is it, plural? Then you have real unity of God, because each individual culture, each individual person brings out the same one God in their way. So this is the idea of having the culture and differences. And God wanted the nations to be spread out. And he said each nation should live in a their location. Now the question is, how should these borders be in that in not letting others come in, but that everyone should have a unique culture and a unique place in a different location is what God wanted. That was the purpose of the creation. So,
it's not working out.
It's not working out. Why? Chinese is beautiful. I don't want to be a Chinese, but it's a nice culture. It brings out one thing of God. Japanese brings out another. People tell me they love to be in Sweden. I don't know what, there's something good about Sweden. But it says they're very
open
and very Okay, you want to be sick. Some people like South America. South America, everything is mañana. You know, everything is tomorrow. That's also unique.
But Rabbi, their point is, what
no one is rushing. Everyone is wants to live. Here, we're trying to make a living, but we're not alive. We're rushing, and we're trying to make a living, but we're never living. When are we going to live? Oh, I'm working to make a living. But when are you going to actually live? Well, I have to work to make a living. And you work and work and work and work, and when are you going to live? In South America, they live. And then after they live, they think about work. That's a nice culture. I'm serious. I don't mean this in a joking way. In Russia, that's a whole different culture. And also brings out a beauty. Do I want to live in Russia? For me, Russia is one uniqueness, and Poland is another, and Germany is another, and everyone has a different unique. And it's true, because as you see, as the Jews spread out throughout the 2,000 years of exile, Jews lived everywhere. And all the rabbis and all the scholars in each country brought out different parts of the Torah that were unique in that country. The German scholars, there were great, great rabbis that came out from Germany in the last few hundred years that wrote so much law and Torah based on the German culture. Then you had so many great rabbis from Spain before the Spanish Inquisition that brought out, it was called the golden era, over 200 years. They brought out so much music and so much stuff. And now you have, unfortunately, how do you call it, America? No. A United States, which is great. I think it's the greatest gift that God gave to the world. A country of that you could just live a Jew the way you want, no pressure in any way, no one hurting you. You could, and on the contrary, they encourage you. They give you tax breaks and so on. This is an unbelievable society and a culture. Then you have Israeli culture. It's also a culture. Israelis have a different culture, and everyone is unique. So the borders is special to bring out the plural that brings out the oneness. Any questions about this before you go further? It's clear, no? So now let's talk about the borders. Now that we know that every culture and every country should be separate, how should the borders be? Should it be guarded in a way that we shouldn't allow anyone in? Or no, the Torah says, let everyone in. So we're going to show you in Jewish history that Jewish nation wanted to go through some borders to get to Israel, and the nations didn't allow them. And God says, you know what? They have a right not to allow, and we'll still see what was their fear, and leave them alone, go to the next nation. What was their fear? We'll soon see. So let's read text 13a and 13b.
Your bolts shall be of iron and copper. With this verse, Moses addresses all of Israel. He is saying that Israel's mighty warriors shall dwell in the border cities, and this will serve to lock up the land. Enemies would be unable to enter, as if the land were sealed with locks and bolts made of iron and copper. Moses sent messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom. So says your brother Israel. We know of all the hardship that has befallen us. Our fathers went down to Egypt, and we sojourned in Egypt for a long time. And the Egyptians mistreated us and our forefathers. We cried out to God, and he heard our voice. He sent a messenger and took us out of Egypt. And now we are in Kadesh, a city on the edge of your border. Let us now pass through your land. We will not pass through fields or vineyards, nor will we drink water from the wells. We will walk along the road of the king's choosing, and we will turn neither to the right nor to the left until we have passed through your territory. Edom replied, you shall not pass through me, lest I go out toward you with the sword. The Israelites replied, we will go along the road outside the cities, and if we or our livestock drink any of your water, we will pay for it. We only want to pass through on foot, nothing else. But he said, you shall not pass through. Edom came out toward them with a vast force and with a strong hand. Edom refused to allow Israel to cross through his territory. So Israel turned away from him.
Now think about it. Moshe used very diplomatic words. He says, we're brothers. We're going to give you a great income. We're going to buy water from you. We're going to buy food from you. Look how many countries fight that the Olympics should be in their, right, in their country. Why? Look how much income it brings to the country. And they fight and fight for it. Here the Jews have 2 million people. We're going to walk through your city, through your country. We're going to buy things. We're going to buy food. We're going to buy clothing and so on. You'll make money. Let's just go through so we can get into our country, to Israel. Edom said, no, we're not going to let you in. Why? They were afraid of security. They were afraid if they're going to let the Jews in, it's going to deter and get rid of their security. What happened? What were they afraid of? If you see in 14b, what was their fear?
Edom refused to allow Israel to cross through his territory. Why did he refuse? Because the Edomites were afraid of the Jews. They said if they destroyed the Egyptians in whose land they had dwelt, they certainly will attempt to do the same to us, considering that our father Esau despised their father Jacob. As it says, Esau hated Jacob, and Esau said in his heart, I slay my brother Jacob.
So Edom is the child of Esau. Esau and Yaakov. Esau didn't get along with Yaakov. So they were afraid that if they're going to let the Jews through the land, the Jews will take revenge and bring criminal and destroy them. So they were afraid of having them come in because they're going to destroy the land and take revenge of their father Jacob that didn't get along with Esau. So Edom didn't allow them for security purposes, for self-security. So the Jews left him alone. So what do we see from here now? That the fact that borders are closed and that every country doesn't allow certain people that are afraid that could hurt their security, the Torah accepts it. And the Torah didn't say to Moshe, go fight them and go conquer them. The Torah says, leave, go to the next country. Try the next nation. They tried three more nations till they went to Sichon and then they went through there. So you see from here that there is a concept that a country has a border. And God blessed the Jewish people that their borders should be closed, that the enemy shouldn't come in. So there is a border. Because Israel is for the Jewish people. So Edom, let's take it in today's society. A lot of times people say, why should we close the border, be tight on the borders, so we don't have terrorists coming and hurt us. Same thing like Edom said. Don't let the Jews in. They might hurt us. I'm just giving similarities. Now, you could say that the Jews were 2 million people and a terrorist is one or two or three, whoever comes in, you know, sneaks in. So why? We should make everyone restricted? If it's a nation that wants to come in, then I'm afraid. I won't let them in. But if it's individuals that want to come in, so why should we be so strict? Because maybe one or two won't be good people? Well, you have an army, you have a police force that'll have to enforce it, like everything. So you can look at it in both ways. But what do we have till now? Let's sum it up. God wanted the world and each nation to live in its own distinctive place. Our ancestors' borders must be secured against enemies. An immigrant must ask permission before entering a country, like the Jews asked permission from Edom. And governments can refuse entry when faced with an external threat, even if the threat is not declared, but only fear. It's not for sure, but the country has a right to do so. The only question remains, okay, the country has a right to put a border and to make laws of who they let in, but what is those laws and how should the country do it in a right way that doesn't conflict with the Torah perspective? So we're going to now go into another topic, which is a concern for many of immigration, of taking away business. You know, new immigrants will take away the opportunity for the local citizens to be able to produce and have their own jobs. And many people in the countries don't have job. So now that you get more immigrants, we're going to take away that opportunity. So let's read text 15. This is a Talmudic story. In those times, they used to build cities, and every city had its like little shtetl. And there was like a lot of little cities, little towns, call it, like Tenafly, Kresko, different towns. And look, Tenafly has its own police force. Kresko has its own. It's not like Bergen County, it's just one opened thing. You know, there's a sign, oh, entering Kresko. And there you have another police force, you have another mayor, you have another council, you have other planning boards, you have other zoning boards.
How can we have one police force then? For like police or sheriff, whatever.
That's something else. The sheriff has a right to go anywhere, but then you have each town has its own local force. It's not that the sheriff serves everyone, it's just sheriff.
Powers, really.
Huh?
The sheriff doesn't have a lot of police powers.
Right, but they have power in different ways. Right? The Palisades Parkway Police.
The sheriff just sent out a picture of the terrorist. I got one from the sheriff.
Oh, you see that? Yeah. So look what he says in text 15, yeah?
Rabbi Huna, the son of Rabbi Yehoshua, said, "It is quite clear to me that residents of a town can prevent an outsider from setting up a competing business in their town. If, however, the person who wishes to open the new business pays local taxes, the residents cannot prevent this."
You hear what he's saying? I live in another town and I want to open up a business in a different town. Can I do that?
Yes.
If he pays taxes to the town that he opened the businesses. In other words, normally when you pay taxes, you pay to where you live. Am I right? Let's say you live in Tenafly. Who do you pay taxes? To the Tenafly municipality. Now you're opening up a business in Kresko. Do you also pay taxes in Kresko municipality?
No.
No, you don't pay.
Real estate taxes.
I'm just saying. So here what happened was a guy lived in another city and wanted to open up a business in another city. So they say the only time he could do that is if he's going to pay taxes also to the other city. So for example, if someone lives in New Jersey, opens up a business in New York City, does he pay tax to the city plus his New Jersey taxes that he is a resident, right?
Yes.
So the same thing here. You need to pay for the other. Well, now, why? What's the reason? Does he have the interpretations there?
Yeah, three interpretations.
What's the reason that we allow you to open a business in the other city as long as you pay tax? What's the reason behind it? Why are we concerned? So look what he says. This is a Talmudic discussion, yeah?
An outsider can open a business in any town. An outsider can open a business in any town, but must begin to pay taxes to the town. Read this as follows. If, however, the person who wishes to open the new business will start to pay local taxes, the residents cannot prevent this.
That's one interpretation of the Talmud. Got it? Second,
an outsider can choose to move in, live locally, open a business, and pay taxes. However, if only the business is in the city, but the outsider does not reside in the city can disallow the business, even if the outsider is willing to pay taxes. Read as follows. If, however, the person who wishes to open the new business will start to pay local taxes as a resident of the town, the residents cannot prevent this.
So according to this interpretation, the only way you could open up a business in the next town is if you live in the town. According to the first interpretation, you could open up a business even if you don't live there, as long as you pay taxes also to the town that you opened the business in. According to the second interpretation of the Talmud, the only time you could open up a business in another town besides your, if you live also in this town and you pay taxes to the town, then we allow you also to open up a business. So that means the only time the town can protest is if you end up living in this town. But if you don't, they could say you're not allowed to open up a business because you're taking away business from our residents that won't have their business. Three.
Any person who already lives in town and already pays taxes can open a business in town. But one who does not live in town can be withheld from moving in, and his business can be denied, even if this outsider is ready to pay taxes and wants to live in town. Read, quote, if, however, the person who wishes to open the new business already pays local taxes as a resident of the town, the residents cannot prevent this.
Okay, so basically, what do we see this concept? A concept of not allowing other residents from other towns to open up business unless either they live there, they pay taxes, whatever it is, but they can't just open up a business. You get the concept here? So if I'm living, I don't know how to put it in these countries because it's hard to understand, but I think in America you're allowed to, but in the time of the Talmud, you weren't allowed to open up a business in another town if you didn't pay taxes or you didn't live there or whatever the restrictions is. Why? Because you're infringing on the residents of the town and deteriorating their business industry. Is it clear? United States doesn't hold true. You could open up a business anywhere. Right? Anywhere you want. I understand, but there's no restriction that if you live in Iowa, you can open up a business in New Jersey. But in those times, in Talmudic times, the scholars forbid someone to open a business because we're afraid you're going to hurt the residents that live in the town and take away their business. So this is a halacha. This is a Jewish law. So what happened? In Poland, between year 16... 1617 to 1800s, the Jewish communities in the four major countries, which was Poland, Russia, France, and Germany, were under one rabbinic authority. They were called Va'ad Arba Haratzot. The government approved it. And their authority had legal ramifications that the Jews had to follow. So what happened was, are you familiar with Chmielewski? You're not familiar with Chmielewski? It was the year Tofresh Ches, so it must have been late 1600s, when he destroyed hundreds of Jewish communities in Europe. Chmielewski. Famous, destroyed hundreds of cities. So a lot of Jews went, had to run to other cities. So, look what this is from Poland. Chow. I don't know what city it was.
Pinchow.
And they came to ask a ruling from the rabbinic. What was the ruling say?
The officers and rulers from the city of Pinchow approached us regarding a concern of their community. The poverty in Pinchow has been steadily worsening due to the immigration of people from other communities who have no historical claim to live in Pinchow. The result is that families that have been living in Pinchow for many generations cannot properly support themselves due to their great burden. They determinedly seek employment opportunities but find none. Those who do earn something earn so little that the funds are spent quickly as though there were a hole in their purse. The officers from Pinchow presented this issue to the council of their region, who referred them to us, the Council of Four Lands. Considering what we have heard from the officers about the great unbearable burden that is upon them, we hereby vest the offices of the Jewish community of Pinchow with powers of our office that they may enact regulations as they see fit for the needs of the hour and local conditions, and no one may infringe upon or protest their motions. With regard to those who used to live in Pinchow but have since moved, to another region or community and now wish to return, even their re-entry can be regulated by the leaders of the community according to what they deem to be most appropriate.
So this is the ruling. As you can see, I made a mistake. It was from 1580 to 1764, this rabbinic authority that took over the four countries under the Jewish rabbis. And they ruled that, you know what, they can make restrictions and they can allow, not allow other cities because it's infringing on the income of the people. People just don't have enough to live. And when they people come in, it infringes on their income. And even a resident that used to live there, but then left and came back, also they can make regulations and say, listen, you could only come back on these conditions. You have to pay a certain tax, whatever. Who knows what the regulations were. Why? Because it's infringing on the income and the welfare of the people of this city. It's clear. How about if it doesn't infringe, like in Text 17,
We can disallow people from other towns to come and live in our town if they will diminish our earnings that are necessary for our livelihoods. In this case, however, when Simon will not earn but only spend his funds in the city, then in my opinion, we cannot refuse him the right to live in the city.
Clear? So now let's take it to our modern times. When people come from out of the United States and they immigrate, do you feel that it infringes on the citizens of the United States' income or it doesn't make a difference? Seriously, I don't mean it's a joke. I don't know the answer to this question. But do you feel that if 100 Russians move to America, or 500 Chinese move to America, is that going to infringe on the citizens of America, that it's going to hurt their economy?
It depends.
Okay, so tell me. I'm asking you.
It depends. I mean, sometimes in America, a corporation has an opening and they can't find anyone qualified for the job. Then they can go out of the U.S. to find a candidate. And they have to prove that there's nobody qualified to do the job here.
Yeah. So do you feel that it's infringing on our economy?
Would be missing this discussion, the term of legal and illegal immigration. When they had legal immigration, like in the beginning of 20th century, so many people came to the country that sometime in 1920s, they had to hold the entire immigration to absorb those who are already in the country. So that's, I think, is part of solution to this.
So after a certain years, you have to stop.
You can't allow everybody in, because then
it's going to infringe the... She's saying that there was times that they, like in the early 1900s, a lot of immigrants came in. And then you had 1920, when was it they stopped? 24. That they put a stop because it was too hard on the country, and then they had the depression, whatever. So they put us up. So she's saying it, let immigration be legal, and then when you see that it's getting hard, you put a stop to it till the country can adjust and then open it again. Now we have a problem. We have a lot of illegal immigration. No, illegal that takes away the business because people are getting jobs, right? That's what people complain. But the question is different. The question is, we know one thing. Every country can have a border according to Torah. We know that they can make their rules according to Torah. The question is, should the country allow the immigrants? Well, if it infringes on the economy, then they have a right to not allow it, if it does. We see it in the cities, that in the Talmudic discussion, and even the community of Poland, that the Vlad Abarosa says, you know what, if it infringes on your economy that you can't survive, then you should be allowed to restrict or give them restrictions. Like say, okay, you could come, but you can't do this and this, whatever. I don't know how you would do that. So that, I don't know how it works in America, if immigration takes away jobs, or maybe on the opposite. They say that the Chinese bring in a lot of business here. You know, they open up new markets, and people want to invest. Some people say, no, the Chinese take away a lot of business because everyone is doing business in China. So I don't know. I'm just telling you the ramifications in Torah, which is legit. Now, yeah?
You said that at the beginning, when the world was first created, that God wanted, you know, to have... he said every country has a different culture, and that the tribes serve God according to the soul potential. So I think culture is a big problem now.
Also,
emigrating here, and they don't like our culture.
Yeah.
They don't really want to be here. They just don't have anywhere else to go.
That's another question. The question is... That was okay. The question is another question. Could we get people to come immigrants and become Americans and adopt the culture of America?
What used to be.
It used to be like that?
100%. Nobody came here. They wanted to assimilate.
Right.
World War II, everybody that came here, everybody wanted to assimilate. The first thing they did was learn English.
But today it's not like that. Today you have a lot of...
After the war and in the 50s, it was like that. People came here because they wanted to, assimilate.
Right.
But even a lot of Jews came to this country, they wanted to be Americans.
That's right.
Right?
Exactly.
Of course they changed their names.
So they wanted to be. Now we have a lot of immigrants that want to still stay their culture that they wore in their original country. They don't want to change the language. I'm not even speaking about terrorists. I'm speaking about even good people.
Miami, because no one speaks English.
Oh, Miami, right. It's all South America?
Yeah, everybody speaks Spanish in her own neighborhood, and she doesn't understand Spanish.
And also,
she doesn't know if she has to learn.
People are concerned because so many Mexicans come in.
But that's illegal. It's not legal.
Okay, but even though they're illegal, they still get our government benefits. They get benefits. They get health insurance.
Right.
I think
They
have a lot of children. They get medical benefits.
Oh, everyone?
That we're paying the taxes for them.
Uh-huh.
We're paying
okay,
for
that's
their,
good. But you know, want to hear something else? Someone said an interesting thing. If you look at the founding fathers of America, what was the reason they founded America?
Freedom of religion.
Why? They escaped a country that was oppressing them. And they wanted to found a country that allows anyone to come to be free to serve God in that way. So someone expressed just opposite. America's culture is that they're multicultural.
Yeah.
That's the culture of America.
Yeah, that's true.
Like if you go to other countries, it's one culture.
Well,
in America, the founding fathers of America wanted that it should be multicultural. Anyone that's oppressed in their country could come here and be their culture living here as long as they pay taxes and they're not criminals.
Legal.
You know, legal. I'm saying legal.
Pledge allegiance to the United States.
Well, in order to be a citizen, you have to do that.
Not so.
What are you talking about?
800 people just now were made citizens. They were supposed to be thrown out. And there was a screw-up. They didn't have the fingerprints.
Yeah, that's
and now there are 800 new citizens that were never given and never took the place.
Oh, really?
That's an incident that just happened. Like I said, my parents, their friends, wanted to be here, wanted to assimilate.
Okay.
In those days, into the war, 1950s, that's how it was. They didn't think about illegal immigration.
Okay, let's go to the next story, and then we'll go to the Spanish and back to us. Text 18.
It certainly made sense some 30 years ago to have looser immigration policies. Then, unlike today, there was no envy towards our prophets. Neither was there any protest against it. It is therefore obvious to any fair mind that today the residents of the city can deny outsiders from living in the city if this is against their will. Although the new immigrants seek to improve their condition and have no intention to harm anyone, it is quite clear that this does not negate the fact that they are considered pursuers.
Now let's go to another interesting thing. So we have now We had a few stories of different towns that complained that it takes away the economy. Now we have another issue, which is Jews came to the rabbinate and they had a different complaint, that if they allow other Jews in their town, the Gentiles in their town are going to get upset at them. So it's going to cause anti-Semitism much stronger than it is now. You see what I'm saying? They used to live in towns that were a lot of Gentiles, and the Gentiles allowed the Jews to live there, but it was on the mercy of the Gentiles. And one day they could come and just kick you out. Oh. So they were afraid that if you're going to allow more Jews to move in here, it's going to make that the Gentiles that are there are going to start getting upset, and then we're going to suffer in more anti-Semitism, and they want to kick us out. So they were afraid of that. I understand, but
the quota system.
So look, that's the concept of quota.
Right.
So look what he says in text 19. The officers and ruler from the city.
The officers and rulers from the city of Apta approached us, the council of four lands, about their newfound bitter reality. The many outsiders coming to live in the city place a heavy burden on them, and their presence has triggered vociferous complaints and acts of hostility from the locals and from the noblemen. We hereby nod in agreement to their request to live in complete peace. With the powers vested in us, we hereby decree that no outsider shall reside or stay in Apta without the consent of the city's elders, leaders. The leaders have permission to deport anyone who comes without permission.
You hear this? So that was, what was their concern? Not because of infringing their economy. They were concerned that by allowing Jews to come to these cities, it's going to cause the noblemen and the peasants that are, the non-Jews, to hate the Jews and cause trouble. So therefore, they gave the right to the city council or whatever to restrict the amount of Jews coming into the city. Now let's go to tax hikes. Because they're afraid that the peasants and the noblemen are going to start getting complaints and say, what are you guys doing? So how many Jews? How we're going to support them? And they're going to start charging us higher taxes, and they're going to make a whole thing. So they got the permission that they allowed to restrict the amount of Jews to come into the city. I understand, but they were afraid of anti-Semitism against them. You understand? These are Jews living in a town. And they're afraid that if they can allow a lot more Jews to come into the town, then the anti-Semitism will be stronger.
Like the
so they didn't want other Jews to move in to cause anti-Semitism.
They had.
Yeah.
The Jews were anti-Semitic toward the fellow Jews.
No, but they had a right, he said, because if the other people come in, just like with the economy, you have a right that if it infringes the economy to restrict people to come in, same thing, if it infringes your safety, you have a right to restrict the amount of people, and they had that right.
Well,
let's go.
That's why it was anti-Semitic.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's why I didn't move here in the 50s. I waited till the 90s.
Good for you.
Yeah. Text 20.
The normative law demands that those who come to a Jewish community in which they do not reside in order to do business must contribute to the various tax obligations paid by the community to the kings and ministers. If they do not contribute, the people of the city can refuse their entry for two reasons. Firstly, because they are choking the existing business in town. Another reason is because the local rulers pursue Jewish money and consider all Jews to be wealthy. They raise taxes on the Jews on account of the newcomers, without distinguishing between residents of the city and those coming for business from other communities.
Is it clear?
Yes.
So now we can conclude with one more piece. This whole issue of Jews having the right to restrict other Jews from moving to their town or letting them with different restrictions was only in the European area. That means Russia, Poland, France, Germany. However, the Sephardic Jews, which was more like Spain, Where else do they live? Morocco, I don't know, Algeria, wherever they live, they never had their local authorities give these kind of rulings because they didn't have the same deprived income as the Jews in Europe. Jews in Europe literally were, how would I say, they were tortured in the sense they couldn't do a lot of businesses.
Restricted.
A lot of them had to do money lending. A lot of them had to do a lot of restrictions. But the Spanish, the Sephardic Jews didn't have these restrictions. They owned property. They owned, they did a lot of business with it. So for them, if Jews moved here, there, it didn't make a difference. It didn't infringe on their economy or their security because the anti-Semitism wasn't there till the Spanish Inquisition. But then, so you don't find any of the Sephardic rabbis ruling in such a way. Only the Ashkenazic European rabbis ruling in favor of limiting the residents from other cities to come to their cities because the poverty was so strong and the anti-Semitism was very strong. So they allowed that the Jews could restrict in order not to take away the income of the local Jewish residents that are already starving because it was already hard, and anti-Semitism was 100 times hard with all the pogroms and everything, which the Sephardic Jews did not experience. So the Sephardic Jews was just the opposite. For them, there was no question a Jew could move here, could move there. They didn't have that issue. So all the Sephardic, like the Shulchan Aruch, which was written by the Yosef Karo, which was Sephardi, he doesn't allow this restriction. He says a Jew can live anywhere. Who are you to say no? Now we're going to get to refugees. Refugees is a different situation. Refugees is where Jews are being persecuted and they're running away to go to another country. Oh, now we have a different story. Till now, it was just Jews moving from one country to one city to another city, and they're taking away economy. Refugees means that they're being persecuted, and they're going to be killed. And but you don't want to accept them because it's going to maybe hurt you. There, it's a different story. What are you talking about? We have to let the Jew in, at least till the time is, you know, passes, calms down. Then they could go back to their homeland place. But to say I'm not going to allow Jews to come in because it might infringe on my safety, it might infringe on my economy, that is a big problem. Yeah?
There's a line here on page 69. Another reason is because the local rulers pursue Jewish money and consider all Jews to be wealthy. Now this whole concept of non-Jews, many non-Jews consider all Jews to be wealthy. And I'm just wondering why that is.
Because Jews act wealthy. They come in, it's like they own the world. They come in, they have, you know, a Jew is like a king. They walk around, they're like, you know, the world is mine. So that's number one. Number two, the Jews were very smart. They knew how to make money from nothing. Because they didn't have any opportunities. They took away all opportunities. And they were able to create. So the Gentiles knew that the Jews know somehow how to make money from nothing. So whenever the Gentiles had no money, they took it away from the Jews in Europe. I'm not saying about in Spain. I mean, what's the queen that kicked out of the Spanish?
Isabella.
She wanted the money of the Jews. As you read the history, she wanted their money. So she made all these decrees and so on, and who got the money? The government.
But you could stay there if you converted.
Who wants to convert? Which Jew wants to convert to Christianity?
They practice their religion secretly.
Yeah, and then the children were Muranos, and we don't know what's going on with them. You know, how many Muranos are Jewish today? You don't know?
Rabbi, you mentioned that the Jews are smart. And it wasn't an accident, because someone told me the story a while back that there was a time when the church, like, you know, didn't want its inheritance, or whatever they call them, to be the followers to be educated. Only the priests could be educated, and the priests couldn't have families. So in other words, then education stopped there. But the Jews always valued education.
Yeah, always, yeah, the education.
The story about Isabella actually borrowing it, the money lenders supported her whole situation rather than she took it.
Yeah, but she never gave it back.
Well.
Let's go to text 22. Page 72, so we can conclude the last three paragraphs. Refugees. Okay? Do we have today in America refugees?
Yes.
Who?
Syrians. And the other ones in Minneapolis that just snipe people in the hall. Somalians.
And Syrians, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's read about refugees, yeah?
If refugees flee to a Jewish settlement due to fear and danger, the residents of the community may not stop them from entering and lending money for profit as necessary for their livelihood and the caring of their families. They must be allowed to stay until the danger abates. They should contribute to their host's community's tax obligations in proportion to the amount of capital they invest.
Claire, go further.
The refugees of Lithuania who fled because of the wars have the right to settle in any community they desire until the crisis passes. No community should reject them. They have permission to engage in business to support their needs, but should participate in paying communal taxes in reciprocation. The same applies to those who were expelled from other countries who have found refuge in our country. They may remain if it is impossible for them to return to their hometowns.
So refugees, we have to accept. Now, one of the good things in Israel, you see that a lot of times, like I forgot which year it was, maybe 1977 when Begin was, it was a whole group, I forgot from which country, that no one wanted to accept. And they accepted.
Ethiopians?
No, 1977.
1977, okay.
Ethiopia was later. It wasn't even Jewish people, it wasn't Jewish. But they were being destroyed in their country, and they were able to leave, and Begin made them citizens.
From Vietnam.
Non-Jews. And then they stayed till the country became back settled, and a lot of them went back. But Israel is very good in this concept of, like, not rejecting refugees. You know what I'm saying? Like, people, even non-Jews. It's open to that. So,
but not unlimited.
Of course not unlimited.
Well, but that's what you're talking about now here.
So now, to finish this course, is one question we have to ask ourselves. We see all the different concerns. You have security, jobs, welfare, culture, and all the things that we spoke about. We showed you how the Torah does deal with all of them. The Torah wants there to be countries, wants there to be borders, wants there to be different cultures that bring out different uniqueness of God. At the same time, you have a right if it infringes on the economy to make restrictions, to make things. So the question is today, what's the question today in America about immigration? Is it going to infringe their security? Is it going to infringe the economy? If yes, then you should make maybe restrictions of if they come in, how much taxes they should pay, so they should be part of the government, and they should contribute. My personal feeling, I'm not sure, because I'm not so into the nitty-gritty, I don't think so much I would be concerned about the economy. In other words, I'm not going to be concerned that an immigrant is going to come and destroy American economy. On the contrary, they could add. I would be concerned about security. There should be maybe more background checking of who's coming in. Maybe that should be our concern today, because today that's our primary concern. Because we don't know who's coming in to destroy us. Look how many people came with the Twin Towers. Whatever it was. I'm just saying maybe that should be our restriction. I don't know. Right, and we taught them how to fly
in Florida.
So that's not the point. The point is, you have to figure out what's the problem. What's the problem of immigration here? What are we worried about? Culture.
Yes.
Well, that's a concern, but in America, The founding fathers, I'm just talking out loud, I don't know, the founding fathers wanted a country that everyone that's oppressed in other countries could come and serve God, but maybe they wanted them to serve under American culture or their culture. And the beauty of America is that it's a multi-culture. Maybe that's the culture of America.
The melting pot.
Yeah? So maybe that doesn't, I'm not concerned about culture. So culture is gone. Jobs is not a problem. Security, so make a better background check on the person. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just giving you the ideas, but you see clearly in the Torah about borders. You see clearly in the Torah that there is a concept of getting permission to come into another country, and you see that the Torah respects it, and the Torah allows it, and then you have clearly where it does infringe jobs from one city to another that you could put a restriction, and you have to see how this applies in our country. Is it true? Is it not true? And obviously refugees is a whole different story and a whole different ball game how to deal with people that are being killed in different countries that are running away from the sword. Anyway, the class, this lecture is over.